This is Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman. We have a killer of a show, pardon the pun, tonight's program. We're going to be talking about a wide range of subjects, including things from today's headlines. For example, scientists have discovered huge amounts of water on Mars, and this ups the ante as far as the likelihood of there being life on Mars. And there's so much water there, and for so apparently for such a prolonged period of time, there's all kinds of the planet's teeming with life. I'm absolutely sure of it. And as proof of this, Tom Van Flanden, the late Tom Van Flanden, who was former chief astronomer for the United States Naval Observatory, and the first guy, by the way, to announce officially for the government the existence of Planet X. Unfortunately, Tom passed away this last year, but Tom and I held a number of news conferences in which we discussed not only the finding of these unbelievable faces on Mars, but large tunnels darting in and out of the red planet on the surface and under the surface, covering virtually the entire planet, large trees that had caught the attention of Arthur C. Clarke, and pyramids, of course, but most amazing of all, animal carvings seen and photographed in the sky. And according to Tom Van Flanden's research, these animals were grouped according to the type of animal that it was. What could the purpose of this be? I don't have the answer, ladies and gentlemen, but we're going to be talking about that on tonight's program, and we're particularly going to zero in on UFO abductions, what they might be really all about, how do they figure into the end times, if they do. And my special guest tonight is Harold Egelm, who is a UFO experiencer and contactee himself and the head of an organization called SPACE, which is essentially a UFO abduction support group that operates here in the New York City metropolitan area. And I've got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there are tremendous numbers of people all over the world who have had these experiences. Before we go too much further, I want to give out our toll-free line. Our number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. And that's a free call in the United States and Canada. We encourage you to call up with any questions that you might have for myself or tonight's guest. Also, let me mention that next week my guest will be Jason Rand, who's the author of a very important book called The Return of Planet X. And it's excellent scholarship, and it really, once you read that, I don't think there'll be too much doubt in anyone's mind who has an open mind what's happening in terms of Planet X. Now, I also wanted to comment on the Raelians. I first became aware of the Raelians at the Whole Life, where I attended a Whole Life Expo here in New York City. And there's a guy by the name of Rael, who claims to be a contactee, and who's from France and originally was a race car driver. And then he got involved with, had his experience supposedly, and then formed this international organization called the Raelians that is based in Canada. Rael was in the news again today and yesterday because they did a dastardly thing. They flew a banner called the Swastika Rehabilitation Project. This is a cheap on their part to get publicity, and of course they got a lot of it. Their symbol, and this has shocked me when I first had read their literature about 20 years ago, had very prominently the swastika. Now, it's true that the swastika has been a symbol before Adolf Hitler took it over, but the fact of the matter is that the swastika is directly linked to the Holocaust and all those terrible, terrible memories, and should not be allowed to be used in the way that it's being used. Now, In addition, the Raelians have really, you know, they talk about stooping to the lowest common denominator. I mean, they've used stripper girls to recruit their members, and they did something that got more attention to almost any other story, and that is they claim that they were successfully able to clone a human being. The Raelians really need to be watched. What they're doing regarding the symbol is just the Nazi symbol is just appalling. Now, I also, before we get into the meat of the program, I want to mention that Open Minds magazine, which my good friend Antonio Guineas edits, has just come out with a new issue devoted to ancient astronauts, so I'd recommend it very highly. It's great visual material and great research. Also, if you want to be up to date on not only what's happening with Radio Doomsday Live, but also what's happening with the 2012 movement in general, or specifically from almost any cultural standpoint or anything that's in the news, you'll find it on the official December 21st, 2012 website run by John Kane. The address for the website is www.december21.2012.com. Okay, I'd like to introduce Harold Egel, who has really done a magnificent job here in New York in coordinating and keeping on top of the UFO abduction movement. Harold, welcome to Radio Doomsday Live.
Hi, Mike. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Yeah, I wanted to explore a little bit how you feel the abduction movement interfaces, if it does, with the so-called end times.
Well, people have over the years, abductees, witnesses, have reported dreams or visions of Earth's destructions, very bad things happening to the Earth. These are not reported by everybody who's an abductee or an experiencer, but it's been reported here and there. And a lot of these scenarios could be the Earth exploding, a runaway climate disaster, asteroids hitting the planet, a number of things, but they're not reported routinely by everybody who has this experience. It comes up every once in a while. And when it does come up, some of the times or dates are impressed upon the people, but they never happen according to that schedule. And there's debate whether this is a test of people's fears and reaction to it, or their need to take care of the Earth in some way. Dr. John Mack has studied this extensively and has written about it, how people are moved to get involved with the environmental movement. And so it does set things off, even though it's not necessarily foretelling a major specific disaster.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I want to give out our toll-free number for Radio Doomsday Live. It's 888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. We're inaugurating for this program a new feature called the Great Doomsday Debate, and I will take on anyone on the subjects of Armageddon, the end times, Doomsday, the Mayan calendar, and we want to give an opportunity for people to give both, give their opinions on both sides of the issue. Harold, can you say anything about your own? Can you tell us a little bit about your own UFO experiences?
Well, my UFO experiences go back to childhood. When I was 13 years old, I wanted to become an astronomer, so I had a telescope, and twice I saw UFOs without the telescope, just coming over my the place I lived in New Jersey. One was a disc that was kind of wobbling back and forth. And about a month later, I saw a meteor streak through the sky. But then it slowed down and stopped. and made a right angle turn and just took off at high speed. Those were my first sightings when I was a child. So I've had an interest in the topic, but my own experiences did not come to the fore until, when I was living in a house with other people in New Jersey, shared house that we were renting in the woods, 40-acre woods and property in West Orange, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And the first, within a week after being there, we saw what looked like a ghost approach us, but it wasn't a ghost. It changed to a shadowy figure, so we knew something was going on.
Right.
And then
right.
One night, I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, because I knew it was 3 o'clock, and there was a blue light in the room, and I couldn't move, but I could move my eyes and actually my head a little bit, and I heard a wolf barking and howling at the door, scratching at the door downstairs. I got scared. I fell back to sleep. Next thing I knew, it was noon. I slept very, very late, and I thought I had some sort of out-of-body experience. It would be years later that I got around to researching these experiences with a psychotherapist who did hypnosis, Dr. Gene Munday, and that was in 1988. And we used hypnosis. I did meditation. I'm used to doing TM meditation since the 70s. So that came in handy in recalling apparent encounters, abductions.
Do you think that we have anything to fear from the aliens? And when I say the aliens, I mean the ones that have been apparently abducting hundreds of thousands of people worldwide?
Well, that's a very good question, obviously. And I personally do not fear them myself. But I know a lot of people who do fear. And in our meetings, some people really break down and cry when that fear comes through. And other people feel very positive about this experience, that they're here to help us and guide us and teach us and bring us along in a process of getting to know them, getting other people used to them being here and their presence on Earth. So it's the variable. It's a variable experience.
Do you think that it's sensible for people to use signaling and other techniques in an attempt to make contact with them? I know that you and some of your followers or some of your associates have gone up to, for example, Pine Bush, New York, upstate New York, which is an enormous amount of UFO activity, to try to make contact with these beings.
Yeah, we've had contact. It's in Hudson Valley in the village of Brewster in Putnam mm-hmm. County. And Phil Imbrogno identified that whole area as during the 1980 Hudson Valley UFO sightings as a very active. Time magazine identified Brewster, Life magazine identified Brewster as a UFO sighting area back in 1966. Henry Luce himself mm-hmm. sent a team of photographers there. So I went up there. Part of the idea of space is people who want to take this experience further and be more proactive and try to bring the experience more I wouldn't say a friendly, but a understanding relationship we have with the visitors or the beings, the aliens, whatever you want to call them, non-human, the UFO occupants, as I prefer. We go to Brewster on field trips. We did this a lot during the 1990s. And since a lot of people there, most people there had experiences anyway, and were not afraid of their experiences, we began seeing UFOs. We began having sightings. Some of us, including myself, had sightings of the UFO occupants. And they were on the ground and... this goes back, my first experience myself was in 1988 before we founded the group. And starting in 1992, we had other experiences where we saw shadowy figures that raced down the road and jumped into the woods and all sorts of things. So we don't need flashlights. We don't need those things that are necessary that you hear in other reports of people going out to make contact. They know we are there. That is a hotspot, a UFO hotspot, a long-time hotspot. There are these old, ancient caverns there that probably go back to Celtic colonization or occupation.
Yeah.
Back in
yeah,
the
I've seen those pictures. Yeah.
Yes, and that was researched by Phil and Brogno, and there is one in the site by the site where we've had the experiences. So they're there. In fact, one night we were there. This is in May of 1993. There were 14 of us. And we did a circle, and people concentrated on the UFOs we were seeing. These UFOs are nocturnal lights that travel in a particular pattern, blink out, come on, travel in tandem flight, and so forth. We imagined, communicate with us, show us you can form a triangle. Then out of the western sky over the horizon came three nocturnal lights. They paused, were high up in the western sky, formed a perfect equilateral triangle, stayed there for about a minute or so, then moved on and disappeared. So that is kind of a communication, that's kind of a contact, that's a response, us being there. And of the 14 people there, 13 were experiencers. And I can say that everybody was really happy and jumping around when the UFOs did this for us.
Yeah. Aren't some of your members, very concerned in that these abductions sometimes quite frequently repeat, and members of the same family, even over a period of generations, have experienced similar kind of abduction experiences, as well as women believing that they have been impregnated by aliens who have then taken their half-human, half-alien offspring?
Yes, certainly. And people in our group who've had those intergenerational experiences going back to their grandparents, because probably back, or great-grandparents even, this probably goes back to the late 19th century when there were a lot of mysterious airship sightings. And there's concern within the families that their children will be visited, and a lot of people don't want that. Other
right.
people kind of are curious as to why their family, why them. And they look back in their family, and they find that somebody in the family was psychic, someone was involved in paranormal experiences researched. This happens every once in a while. And somebody might have been involved in some fantastic discovery in science in the family in the past, in fact, currently. So there's a broad range of feelings about what's happening within the family. There's concern for their children, certainly, and the children do get it sometimes, and so it's a whole range of feelings about this. And, of course, the obvious physical invasion of people probing is always disturbing. So that's a big factor, an obvious factor, of course. But there are people who do not have this through generations. There are, every once in a while, including myself, where our family members have never had an experience, never saw a UFO, never knowingly had an experience. And these are the loners, the lone experiencers, and they're usually more positive about the experience or more wanting to find out what is a relationship? Why happening to me but nobody else in my family? So that's an issue that people bring up every once in a while.
Right. The number to reach Harold or myself with any questions you might have is a toll-free number, 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5741. In the United States and Canada, of course, our show can be accessed worldwide on the internet through BBS Radio. The wonderful people who help us with some of the technical part of the show. Harold, where do the Anunnaki, the legendary beings from Planet X, how do they factor into this? You've been talking, I assume, mostly about the Greys, these stereotypical short guys who have these very large eyes and tiny slit for nose and mouth, and they were generally identified as being aliens, but the Anunnaki, of course, are human-like because they if you believe Sitchin, they mixed their DNA with ours. They came down, and for reasons of mining gold, took pre-humans, mixed their DNA with ours, and therefore jump-started the human race. How do you feel about the Anunnaki? The Anunnaki aren't involved with this, are they?
Well, through the experience of our group meetings, which have actually hundreds of people over a period of years cumulative have attended, the Anunnaki come up very, very little in their own personal experience. When they do come up, it's because someone wants to change the subject or get talking into it, a whole discussion on that. But for the people themselves, it's hardly ever reported of any experiences with the Anunnaki. Now, people do report experiences with humanoids, people who are very much look like us, could be walking down the street and they could be us. Sometimes they're described as the Nordics. Sometimes they are, most of the times they're telepathic. And there's a whole history of this, and all types of human beings have been reported. Some believe there might be hybrids, human-like hybrids. It's always hard to say, and no one has ever mentioned in all that time that these might have been the Anunnaki through our experience.
Harold, you're an environmentalist. You've been at for a very long time, as well as you're working at the Brooklyn Daily Eagle as a reporter. How serious is the environmental situation, and is it fair to say that it signals what the Bible refers to as the end times, or is it just a continuing saga of the way that Earth operates, and there'll always be earthquakes, and there'll always be tsunamis and volcanoes erupting?
The last time Earth experienced a big doomsday, that was 65 million years ago when the giant asteroid crashed and wiped out the dinosaurs and most of the life. But it took thousands of years to recover, but the Earth did recover. And new forms of life came up, and the mammals, of course, thrived after that. But anyway, we seem to be going through a lot of catastrophes, some potential catastrophes right now. I can cite a few of them right now. And they're all global effects. One is the release of carbon through in the atmosphere, and that is very significant. A report by an organization, the Carbon Project, said that in the year 2009-2010, carbon went up at an incredible 5.5%. That alone was a concern. Another thing is the release of methane gas. Methane gas is locked usually in the northern Arctic, and the permafrost. And the permafrost has been melting significantly across Siberia and the tundra, and also and under the Arctic Ocean with the increasing disappearance of the Arctic ice caps, which is something that's watched every summer. And we're getting into the Arctic ice watch now. And several organizations have released reports, including James Hansen, who's a director of NASA's Goddard Institute at Columbia University. He recently had a piece in the New York Times saying that it's gone beyond hope of reversing it. Another thing are things that have nothing to do directly with the Earth, but are kind of off Earth. The sun. The sun is now getting into a high period of magnetic activity. Three years ago, the National Academy of Science released a report. Should there be a magnetic storm, a super solar storm called a coronal mass ejection, the equivalent in energy would be something in the order of 10,000 atomic bombs in the Earth, the force. This could paralyze the whole technological structure of the world. The United States would go dark, all these countries would go dark, electricity would take months and months to repair. In the meantime, the cost on life and suffering would be tremendous. The National Academy of Science has estimated that as a result of being hobbled back to a stage where we're not used to, One-third of the U.S. population could perish. And that is very, very significant. Now, whether it'll be hit by these storms is always an iffy question. The last time was a big storm happened was in 1851, knocking out telegraph lines. It was a big one, almost as big as this one was, but not as significant. So it's always a matter of the aim of the mass ejection. Does it come to the Earth, or does it go someplace else and miss us entirely, or just skid us, skid by us, or if it's not that powerful, is it powerful enough to cause temporary problems, as happened in Vancouver, in British Columbia, a few years ago, where they lost power for actually a few days, maybe a few weeks in some places. So there are various things going on.
Okay. I just want to give out our toll-free number. It's 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. I'm particularly anxious to hear from any UFO contactees out there, or abductees, or experiences, or whatever you choose, to however you choose to describe yourself, as to any experiences that you may have had, particularly that relate to what we were discussing at the opening of the show, and that is some abductees have been shown images that seem to be right out of the movie 2012 of massive wholesale destruction of the Earth by their extraterrestrial or alien captors. There would seem to be a direct connection here with the time that we're living in. You know, I have been doing all kinds of research for my book, Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, and I was able to dig up contacts between Elvis and many other famous rock stars, Mick Jagger, David Bowie, Jimi Hendrix, and John Lennon, and many others, and Michael Jackson as well. With extraterrestrials, but I happen to know Larry Geller, who I met in relation to writing my first book, and Larry was Elvis's closest personal friend, as well as his hairstylist, and he became his spiritual mentor, and was responsible for putting together a library of about 300 spiritually oriented books for Elvis, which he took everywhere when he went on vacation. He would actually have three trunks full of these books, and they included some UFO books, by the way. I asked Larry whether Elvis believed in the end times. And the reason I did that is because there's a jumpsuit that's on display currently at Graceland that shows the Mayan calendar, and he wore that the last year of his life for many performances in Las Vegas and elsewhere, and it was his favorite jumpsuit, and wore it actually in his last performance before he died. And Larry told me that Elvis was deeply concerned about the end times. He obviously took it from a religious perspective. Also others, Jimi Hendrix and Michael Jackson. I spoke to Michael, and we have tape recordings from Jimmy in which they're all expressing themselves in various aspects of potentially end times scenarios. Harold, I wanted to ask you as a journalist, what your take is on the on Rael and the Raelians have been getting all of this tremendous press, but all of it very negative, and using things like sex and hoaxing regarding so-called cloning experiments, which, as far as I could tell, have never happened, as well as the use of the swastika for a so-called swastika rehabilitation project, the most outrageous thing I could possibly think of. Do you have any contact with these guys? How do you feel about it? Are you as outraged as I am?
I'm definitely outraged, and I agree with everything you said at the beginning of the program. And I've met a couple of them. They're nice people when you meet them, and they seem sincere and everything, but that's as far as I've gone with them, and that was it.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with everything you said at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me give out our toll-free number again. It's 1-888-429-5471. 1-888-429-5471. Harold, what is the media missing when it comes to coverage or non-coverage, as the case may be, of the UFO abduction issue?
Well, they're missing practically everything. In USA Today, which I think was today's newspaper or yesterday's front page, they had about a poll about belief in UFOs, and it's written tongue-in-cheek about the type of American people, how many really believe in it, how many don't, and so forth. And they kind of make fun of it after a while, and the reporter who did the article did a disservice because whoever did the report, missed out totally on the true picture, and obviously in writing the article did no research into the subject, obviously had no interest in doing the research, and therefore failed mostly all the journalistic standards that professional journalists should have. And fortunately, through the years, we've had some excellent professional journalists who've handled this very well. Antonio Nias, obviously, has been one of them. Drew Pearson did in his columns back in the 1950s and 1960s. And there's a whole bunch of people who have handled it very well. C.D.B. Bryan has handled the subject very well. In fact, he wrote a bestseller many years ago about the Vietnam War. And he wrote an excellent one about the MIT UFO abduction conference back in 1992.
Right.
So, but this is rare and far between. And even the New York Times, which has occasional UFO articles, goes to the belief that it's sleep paralysis and everything. And how can you be asleep when you're walking along or driving along 12 noon and the sun is bright and everything and a UFO comes down and you're taken aboard the UFO? That is not sleep paralysis. If it is, you better not be driving.
Yeah. As I've mentioned on the show before, we're really at the point now with extraterrestrials that we know that the Earth has been visited many times. We know that the Roswell crash definitely involved the recovery of ancient aliens. We know that there are at least 400 individuals. I have copies of their videotape depositions who worked at the Pentagon in the 1960s and 1970s. Who were aware of Roswell in many cases, who were aware of the worldwide UFO cover-up. There's not too much need for debate anymore, though we're obviously dealing with a phenomenon that's partially interdimensional, and a lot of people have a hard time. I remember Joan Rivers, when I was on her show, she was very intrigued with this subject, but I remember that she said, "What do you mean interdimensional?" And, you know, it's like a lot of people just don't grasp it or don't want to grasp it. Now, why are we talking about UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrials on a show having to do with what's been called Doomsday or Armageddon, End Times, different names like that? Well, to put everything into context, Radio Doomsday Live essentially is dealing with a whole host of related issues, and we start from the premise that the sun is in, as Harold mentioned, the solar maximum period, which happens every 11 years. However, unfortunately, the emissions being given off of the sun right now, I mean, even as recently as a couple of weeks ago, you have giant solar storms, enormous flares that are coming toward the Earth and that have the power to knock out the power grid, and NASA has said that the power grid could go. Now, on one hand, NASA says that the 2012 thing, and they're referencing the Mayan calendar, of course, which ends on December 21st, is a hoax. Now, something like 10% of the population, this is a very large figure, believe that the world is going to end on December 21st, which is less than 6 months from now. I do not believe that at all, and I'll say that to my dying day, that December 21st, in certain ways, as far as anything of a physical nature, I do not expect it, nor do the Mayans. However, I do think that something unexpected and very huge is going to happen on that particular date, and it's going to be more mental, more spiritual, and let's hope that there's a spiritual level, awakening that takes place, because the planet could never use it more, and perhaps that'll lead to an abandonment of war policies and things of that nature. But in the second area of concern is Planet X, and that is if Planet X, or Nibiru as it was known by the ancients, is in fact on its way back to Earth, which I believe it is, and nobody can say for sure that it's on our doorstep, but it could be, and certainly the earthquake activity, the heightened earthquake activity, would be a sign of that, as well as the volcanic activity. But we really can't be sure. Nonetheless, that planet, if it's close enough, could wreak havoc with the population. The third concern is the worst case scenario, having to do with the with a possible pole shift, which even Einstein embraced as something that would happen. The Mayans believe it happens every 24,000 years, but the window. So-called window of opportunity of that happening, I think, is so wide that we don't have to be particularly concerned about that scenario at this time. But I do think that what we're going to find and what we're experiencing already with birds dropping from the sky and by the hundreds of thousands, with fish washing up on shore by the hundreds of thousands, and the bumblebee population partially vanishing. And Einstein said, by the way, that when the bees go, that human beings would go 4 years later. And so things are very bad. I mean, we've got trees that are 4,000 years old that are now dying. None of this is particularly good news, ladies and gentlemen, but the Mayans have confided to me. I met some of the Mayan elders last year, and they confided to me just recently some very, very alarming information that relates to the Mayan calendar, but not as far as the December 21st date. Just in general, I see the Mayan calendar as a marker, as an important marker, and the deal with the transition period, rather, that we're going through is such that we need to do whatever we can to make it through a very, very, very difficult period, because the Mayans believe that millions of people are likely to die during this transitional period. Now, they've been, you know, soft-pedaling that, or actually not even mentioning that up until now, but I was able to get that from the horse's mouth itself, so to speak, from some of the Mayan elders, and they feel that that's part of the process of what we're going through. So there, people need to be involved with basics. They have to figure that if the power grid goes, things are going to be very rough. They need to store as much food and water as they can. You will not be able to get water out of the tap in your apartment or your home. So all of these are very important issues that need to be dealt with. And of course, also, people need to move toward the center part of, for example, if you live in the United States, if at all possible, and you won't be able to get out of cities on the coastlines in enough time, like here in New York City, for example. Harold, what do you think about the Mayan calendar? What do you personally think might happen, if anything, on December 21st, less than 6 months from now?
Well, nobody knows for sure, but what I've read about, and I've done extensive reading about it, is that it's the end of one great cycle and the beginning of another, and people interpret it what might really happen or might not happen. So there are various things, issues, spiritual awakening, disaster, a change in mental attitude. But many people around the world aren't even aware, despite all the hype of the Mayan calendar, or probably don't give it much thought. So I personally don't think anything will happen that day, except that people will be doing their usual stuff. There'll be a lot of media focused on it, obviously. But I think it's the beginning of one cycle, the beginning of the end of a great cycle, beginning of a new one, according to the Mayan beliefs, which are very, very strong and very important.
How great a change might there be here? Could there be such an enormous change that suddenly people aren't thinking of war anymore?
I would hope that. I've been working on that all my life, being an anti-war, working for an anti-war organization, a peace organization. That would be great, of course, but I don't think that's going to happen. Like, instantly, people would wish that very well, and many people around the world, most people around the world wish that. What happens is what people do, and what people do with what they know and what they have to make peace in this world. I think each individual, and together with others, it's very important to do something about bringing a peaceful earth around. And that's always possible. We're seeing peaceful changes here and there. We see violent changes here and there. So it's a mixed bag of change. But we need a world without war. And that's been the message for, I think, throughout human history, and even more so now with all the possibilities of someday atomic weapons going off in anger. And we can't afford that. We can never afford war. War has to end, or it will end us, as President Kennedy once said.
Okay, why don't we move to the subject of Fukushima, Japan,
yes,
and the nuclear meltdown there, and the fallout, the literal fallout from it that's happening even right now as we speak. What can you tell us about Fukushima? How dangerous is it? Should I be upset that you cannot buy tuna fish in the markets down in Chinatown in New York City because apparently bluefin tuna has low levels of radioactivity. I don't know what low levels mean, but I don't want to be having tuna with any levels of radioactivity.
No, and I don't eat tuna, but for various reasons, other reasons. But anyway, yes, the reactor number 4 is still a major concern. Senator Ron Wyden of Washington State went on a tour a couple of months ago and was very concerned with what he saw with that reactor still slowly melting down and very hard to get it reversed. And there have been various reports. Greenpeace did a report a few months ago about the disaster and the danger of reactor number 4 going much worse and releasing far more radioactivity, especially cesium-137, which is extremely dangerous to have, and to have that pour into the atmosphere affecting Japan, which Japan's been affected already, but this is an ongoing situation that is being closely watched, and international teams have been urged to come in and take charge for a global effort to resolve this problem before it's too late. So that's a major concern, because if there is a major meltdown of that reactor, it could affect the whole northern hemisphere. Immediately, consequences in those over many generations and over the years. And one expert, Arne Gunderson, is very well known within the nuclear power community, has warned that this could be the catastrophe of our lifetime. So it's a major concern.
Yeah,
enough is being done for it. Things are being done, but not enough. That's the message. That's the whole concern right now.
Okay, this is Mike Luckman with Radio Doomsday Live. My guest tonight is Harold Egghelm, a UFO experiencer and the founder of an organization called Space for UFO Abductees. Our number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. If you're an abductee, a UFO abductee or experiencer, you've had an experience that you'd like to share with the audience, certainly give us a call. We only have about 10 minutes or so left to the show, but if you call right now, you might be able to get through. We've been covering a lot of ground tonight. Radio Doomsday Live has been getting quite a lot of press, the Huffington Post, USA Today, and then the Global Post, and we even hit the front page of the official NASDAQ stock market website, which was unbelievable to me. So we know that the media is going to become you know, more and more aware of this. There are lots of companies that are involved right now in producing reality TV shows on this subject. If you want to keep abreast of the latest developments on all angles on the approach of the end of the Mayan calendar and possible significance that might have, I highly recommend that you go to the official 2012 website. That's www.december21-2012.com, run by a friend by the name of John Kane, who really does an exquisite job of keeping up with everything. And by the way, Harold, one of your reactions to this is actually at least one website that is now devoted to survival dating. That is, people who have believed that the end of the world is upon us, or at least that we need to take action to cover ourselves in the case of any environmental disasters that might be coming our way. And it's expressly for people who believe in that and who want to have love to their last days. How do you feel about that?
That sounds like a very good website. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of the media is going to be piling on this subject, and of course the media would like to dismiss it as another Y2K thing where it was thought that the consequences would be grave and planes would be falling out of the sky because computers would cease working all over the world and stuff like that. And of course that fortunately never materialized. I'm concerned about NASA, Harold. You know, NASA's played like a major role in the UFO cover-up. It's kept the biggest story in our lifetime, something that has enormous consequences, something that relates to who we are and why we might be here on this planet. They've kept that all under wraps, and quite successfully, although now more and more it's been coming out, but for all these years, maybe 65 years or more, 70 years pushing, they've kept this remarkably quiet. Now they're saying, and they're really going out of their way to do it, and I detect that they're, you know, the man who cried wolf. They're saying that that there's nothing, that essentially that this 2012 controversy is a hoax. They say that on one hand. On the other hand, they have scientists and statements that are being put out by scientists and official statements being put out by NASA about that the power grid could go down. Now, they can't have it both ways. They're also saying that they're concerned about, some people who are, you know, border on being perhaps crackpots who might take this the wrong way, and they're concerned about a Heaven's Gate-type scenario or people who just are under that kind of pressure and they feel that they can't take it anymore. Now, the whole point of Radio Doomsday Live is that there is hope and that there is reason for optimism, but only if you become forearmed with the proper information. And it may be that you want to consider reorienting your life, making certain changes at least in basic stockpiling of food and water and other supplies that may be needed at any time. You know, my brother lives down in Florida, and I remember at the time that Hurricane Irene was coming in, he called me up early in the morning and he said, you know, you better go out and get flashlights and batteries or anything like that that you need. And I thought, well, he's overreacting. He said, no. He said, you know, you'll be surprised. It won't be easy to get. And sure enough, I went out. And I don't care if you had $50 or even $100 to spend on a flashlight. They were all gone, from the cheap flashlights to the most sophisticated flashlights. You could not get a flashlight for love or money. You couldn't get batteries for love or money. So the time to prepare is now. And, of course, people are... I see we've got a caller on line two. Tommy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, Tommy. Yes, we can. You're on Radio Doomsday Live. My guest is Harold Egeln, and I would like to we'll answer any questions you might have.
Well, hey, thank you, Harold and Mike. Great show. This is fun stuff. I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to jump in and and with a little collaboration here, and add a little another viewpoint on the 2012 timeline, if that's all right. I don't know how much time you got.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. Let's hear. Yeah, we started that segment anyway in tonight's show. We're encouraging people to join the what we're calling the Great Doomsday Debate. So tell me your thoughts on this 2012 controversy.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. In my mind, there is none. No controversy. It's certainly showing up a lot out here, though. It's all really quite simple, but like they say, it's a very complex, multi-dimensional subject that you know, we live in a multi-dimensional universe, and excuse me, the indoctrination that they gave us was to be simple so that we could get up and go to work to every day and shut up and don't ask any questions, just do your job. But it's a lot of things to pull together to make simple. And I could get off in a couple different areas here, but just to touch on the Mayan aspect here, the Mayan calendar is simply a schedule for tracking consciousness in the aspect of time. And at the end of 2012 or thereabouts, or in this time period, it's the end of the construct of time itself, not life or the earth. And there's a super wave coming, and there is a transition to be made for a transformation from a caterpillar to a butterfly, and it's all wonderful. But the people controlling the world and the earth and the prison planet operation, since they couldn't ascend to a heaven on earth, they didn't want you and me to either. So they threw the breadcrumbs down the opposite trail so that they everybody would go into a negative direction and default into negativity and judgment. Because if anybody is in judgment, that frequency is much too low to be recognized by a very high, happy frequency wave that's going to lift you up into 5D reality, you see.
Tommy, so, are you saying that the people who run the world, who have a negative orientation, who are power hungry, want to control us, are you saying that they will not on December 21st react in any kind of a positive way, or they can't react in some sort of a positive way to this time wave that you say may take place?
No, it's all negative. The world is a prison planet operation taken over a long time ago to drain your negative coherent emotion through the financial economic system and religion. And it's simply, you could be sitting in your chair at home, and because we're very sensitive emotional creatures, that makes us unique on the planet, so we could feel, so we could love and have compassion. They've used our sensitive emotional nature against us, like the judicial system. What you say can and will and is being used against you, and that's what everybody in your life is doing. That's mimicking the same system. It's a very interestingly though deep thing that I love this stuff because I'm not confused about it. There's always more to learn. I don't know everything and never will. I don't need to. But the negative ones controlling the planet and off the planet that were, this is all being mitigated by the good galactics that are overseeing this, that are going to help. They've moved this planet forward in very quick time, and it's about to go down any day now. And it's all about to get very good up until the very last minute. Unless anybody could use their imagination, they're not going to figure this out. It's too much. Unless they could hold still and back off the matrix, get out of the matrix, and so you could see the other side of midnight to see what you were dealing with, it's a complete fiction lie from hell on earth. That's it.
Right.
And that's
okay, I want to thank you. We're running out of time, Tommy. I want to thank you very much for calling up Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman. My guest tonight has been Harry Magellan, UFO experiencer and coordinator of organization for UFO abductees called SPACE. And our number is 1-888-429-5471. Write it down for next show. 1-888-429-5471. My guest next Thursday night will be a friend by the name of Jason Rand, who's the author of an important book called The Return of Planet X. Again, I want to urge you to pick up a copy of the latest issue of Open Minds magazine, featuring a spread on, a very good spread on ancient astronauts. And be sure to tune in next week or next time, if there is a next time.